Good morning. This is Dick Marzano, Port of Tacoma Commissioner, President and Northwest Seaport Alliance Co-Chair, calling to order the special meeting of managing members for February 4th, 2021. Right now, the time is 9:02. Our meeting continues to be held virtually in accordance with concurrent resolution 8402 and the governor's proclamation 20-28. Our meeting is being streamed live on the Northwest Seaport Alliance website at www.nwseaportalliance.com, and the public may also listen live by phone by dialing 1-253-671-4257 and entering conference ID 394-027-605.
And Commissioner Marzano, to let you know, we are still waiting on Commissioner McCarthy to be able to sign in.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'll read slower. I'll say slow. Could the clerk right now call the roll, please?
Commissioner Ng?
Present.
Commissioner Bowman?
Present.
Commissioner Calkins?
Present.
Commissioner Keller?
Present.
Commissioner McCarthy? Commissioner Meyer?
Present.
Commissioner Steinbrook.
Here.
Commissioner Feldman.
Present.
Commissioner Marzano.
And I'm here also.
Thank you. We're just waiting again for Cho and McCarthy to be able to log in.
Is John down at the port offices?
He is.
Okay. With our tech team, they should be able to get him on pretty soon. So I will start things off with a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and with liberty and justice for all. Before we begin, and it seems like we were here yesterday, we've got an awful lot to cover. We plan on doing this in an hour and a half because we'll be going into a FMC meeting after that. So with that, I'll just turn this over to John. And Lalani, if you could let us know when Commissioner McCarthy and Cho are on, that'd be great.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you, Co-Chair Marzano and Commissioner. Great to have some time with you today. I know that we're still working. I can see the team working to try and get Commissioner connected here. Let me get started. We have one item for you today in the public session, and that is a five-year look back over the Seaport Alliance. As a reminder, back in 2015, August of 2015, in fact, we officially formed the Northwest Seaport Alliance, a joint venture partnership between the ports of Seattle and Tacoma. And I want to take a moment to just remind us all of what was going on back in 2015 in the marketplace and why the commissioners at that time chose to lean into this opportunity to form the Northwest Seaport Alliance.
John, do you want to go to your slide? The slide is not showing. There we go.
Thank you. And as a reminder, back in 2015, many of the commissioners were not, the current commissioners were not in their commission seats. I think right now we have three commissioners between Seattle and Tacoma that are still commissioners today that were with us as commissioners back in 2015. So there's been quite a bit of change even amongst our commission and certainly staff, and that's to be expected over 5-6 year time frame. So with that as sort of background, I wanted to explain what was going on in the industry. So we were in the midst of competing Seattle and Tacoma back in 2015 and prior to 2015. And I'm gonna go back as far as the late 2000s. There was an opportunity the Port of Tacoma saw in building a brand new terminal, a And they were, the Port of Tacoma was courting NYK Line at the time. NYK, a Japanese-owned shipping line, was calling at the Port of Seattle. And they were looking for their own terminal. They were at that time, they were a customer of Terminal 18 in Seattle. And Tacoma entered into a tentative agreement and ultimately a lease agreement with NYK to shift their business from Seattle down to Tacoma. And as part of that strategy, the Port of Tacoma purchased a tremendous amount of property on the Blair Hylabus Peninsula in order to assemble enough property to build what was to be approximately 200-acre brand new international container terminal. And of course, Port of Seattle, upon hearing this, was quite concerned because NYK was a valued customer at the Port of Seattle. And so there was a bit of a rub between the two ports over that new agreement. And so that was just one example of a few that I'll highlight where we were competing, the two ports were competing for business. Shortly thereafter, around the same time frame, Maersk Line, which was the customer, longstanding customer at the Port of Tacoma, decided to shift its business from the West Sikkim Terminal in Tacoma up to Seattle. And that was due to some pricing advantages that they were offered, as well as some service delivery offerings that the Port of Seattle and SSA provided to Maersk Line. And when Port of Tacoma heard about this news, that was very disturbing to the Port of Tacoma because Maersk was a very large shipping line, and the loss of that business from Tacoma to Seattle certainly was a blow to the Port of Tacoma. So that all occurred in the late 2000s. Moving forward to the mid-2000s or early mid-2000s, there were changes going on in the industry, and the shipping companies were forming their own alliances, and the Grand Alliance had been formed. And the Grand Alliance was, I believe there are four or five members of the Grand Alliance, four or five shipping lines. And the Grand Alliance was utilizing Terminal 18 in Seattle. And Tacoma, feeling the effects of losing Maersk Line to Seattle, and in addition to that, the NYK deal fell apart, so Tacoma was left with a significant debt it had taken on to acquire the land and build this terminal. And without this new customer coming into play at this new terminal, they were feeling the effects of that debt offset by not having the revenue stream to support that debt. Tacoma got very aggressive, and Tacoma courted the Grand Alliance, which NYK had joined, so they were one of the members of the Grand Alliance at that time, and it became a very competitive issue. That customer was a customer of SSA at Terminal 18 in Port of Seattle, and I recall living through that, and ultimately through back and forth offerings between SSA and Washington United Terminal in Tacoma, with the support of the Port of Seattle and Port of Tacoma competing with each other, the Grand Alliance ultimately decided to shift their business from Seattle down to Washington United Terminal in Tacoma. So that was another example of fierce competition in Puget Sound between the Port of Seattle, Port of Tacoma. Couple of other examples, non-containerized examples, that didn't really play out but could have. Shortly after the Grand Alliance competition played out, that's when things really picked up around the discussion of the formation of the Seaport Alliance, because both Seattle and Tacoma were feeling losses over time and feeling like there's got to be a better way for the Gateway to approach the marketplace where we're taking from each other yet losing market share in the midst of that to the Canadian Gateway and some other threats that were forthcoming. And so the alliance discussions came about, and ultimately decision was made August of 2015 officially to form the Northwest Seaport Alliance. Post-formation, there were some leases that came up in the Tacoma Harbor around now Alliance business with AWC, the auto processing facility, and their partner Glovis, and also WWL, a major break bulk carrier. So imagine if we wouldn't have formed the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and imagine underutilized capacity that existed in the Gateway. I can only bet that Seattle would have competed to try and attract that non-container business from Tacoma to Seattle, as was the case with the other competition previous to the formation of the alliance. The other thing that was happening is there was a major infrastructure project with the widening of the Panama Canal, and there was speculation about how that would affect trade and market share in the Trans-Pacific trade specifically. And we've seen that play out now, where the Gulf and East Coast has taken a larger percentage of the market share in the international container trade. And so that's another competitive threat that was really sort of a looming threat, and now is a real issue for all of us. The other aspects I wanted to remind us of, back when we were forming the alliance, Port of Tacoma was in the middle of the redevelopment of Husky Terminal, a major capital investment, and was in the middle of a lease negotiation with, at that time, K Line Shipping Line. And Seattle was planning for the redevelopment of Terminal 5 in Seattle. And at that time, the utilization of our cargo terminals was somewhere around 50%, maybe a little bit higher than that, but not much. So there was underutilized capacity. Therefore, there was this tension that existed both in Seattle and Tacoma to increase that utilization of their separate terminals, at potentially at the expense of the other port. And so when we think about the formation of the alliance, and if we would have not formed the alliance in 2015, there's an assumption that Port of Seattle would have gone through with the redevelopment of Terminal 5, because big ships were coming and there was a need for both harbors to create more big ship ready terminals to respond to the market and the changes in the marketplace. I think that's a fair assumption to be made, that Seattle would have leaned into that redevelopment project. And in addition to that, Tacoma had already made their decision to move towards the redevelopment of Husky Terminal, was in starting that project. And we were in negotiations on a new lease with K-Line. And I can imagine that if we hadn't formed the alliance, there probably would have been some competitive aspects with regard to the negotiation of that lease, where Seattle might have seen an opportunity to try and attract that customer to Seattle. So there was, again, a lot going on. None of this activity in the formation of alliance had any distinct effect on the competition outside of the Gateway, and that still exists today, as we all know. We had competition with Canada predating the formation of the alliance. We had competition with Southern California Gateway, yet we also had competition right here in Puget Sound. And I would argue that as a region, when we were taking business and the jobs that come with it from Seattle to Tacoma or Tacoma to Seattle, we weren't creating new economic development and jobs. Really, we were just shifting the jobs from one harbor to the other, and sometimes to the detriment of the gateway. So all of those were compelling reasons why the 10 commissioners at that time said there's got to be a better way. And in addition to that, the commissioners saw that by leveraging our political strengths of the two ports, combining them into one, that it gave us a better and stronger voice, a better chance to influence policy at the local, state, and federal level, which is being played out today. And later you'll hear about some of those activities. It also gave us an opportunity to respond to the marketplace as a single gateway rather than as two harbors. And I would say that that has served us well in providing higher levels of service to our customers, because we can really focus on a gateway approach. And there are strengths of each of our licensed properties. And so it gives us a broader menu of options to offer the customer base when we can use the shared assets of the Seattle and Tacoma Harbor licensed properties. So those were the compelling reasons, as I recall, to why the commissioners at that time leaned into formation and alliance. And as a result of that, if we can go to the next slide, the commissioners at that time said, we need to understand what our scorecard looks like so that we can measure the success against what our expectations are when we form this alliance. And so this balanced scorecard was created back when we formed the alliance, and we still use it today. The balanced scorecard has four quadrants, and they're all interrelated. The first is cargo volume, and that we hope to continue to grow the volume of cargo by the formation alliance in a more effective manner than if we were competing as two ports. That we would also, related to that, create more jobs and economic activity for our region, for the state. And by approaching that together, I think we're stronger in that fashion. That we would also not lose sight on our financial measures of success, because although we're not like a private business where we focus solely on financial returns and shareholder equity, we do need to make sure that we have a financially sustainable model so that we can continue to reinvest in our gateway and create more jobs and economic activity. Combined with the fourth quadrant, which is equally as important, and that's the environmental stewardship, because as we talked about even at our meeting the other day, this gives us license to operate and to grow. And so it is critically important that our values are aligned with the community values and that we address such things as climate change and do that in a responsible way and in partnership with the shipping lines, terminal operators, and the whole supply chain partnership. So those are the four measures of success. And it's a constant balancing act that we go through there, because there's times where we choose to put more emphasis in one area or another area. Yet it's important that we not lose sight of the fact that all four of these quadrants are critically important to our success. And one quadrant should not dominate any of the other three. So this is a scorecard again that we use today. The last thing I'll say before I hand it over to David, and David will walk us through a more detailed analysis of how the formation was of the alliance was viewed by our bond rating agencies and how we came about for the formation of the alliance from a financial perspective. We have received tremendous accolades from the industry as a result of the formation of the alliance. In fact, it's been recognized not just nationally, but internationally as a highly innovative approach to the changing industry that we live in. And I think it still serves us well today. In fact, when I talk to colleagues, within North America that are leading other gateways, they talk about with some envy what we did with the ports of Seattle and Tacoma. So I think it is serving us well. It's certainly not perfect, yet it, in my opinion, and I think it's shared opinion, that it's far better than us competing with each other here in Puget Sound. So with that, I'll turn it over to David to walk us through a more detailed presentation.
David, before you begin, I wanted to let Commissioner Marzano know that Commissioners Cho and McCarthy are in the meeting.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Commissioners. This is David Morrison, for the record. I am going to go through a presentation, elements of a presentation that the two home ports gave to our two rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, separately, in May of 2015. John's done an excellent job summarizing this presentation. We'll go through some of this will be a repeat of what John just said, but I think it's worthwhile to see the details. I do want to set expectations in that the financial results for 2020 will not be done until February 19th. There's just processes that the two home ports go through to get final numbers for 2020. That said, we can move on to the next slide. We did what we could to look at distributable cash. This is all a chart that you should be familiar with. We showed it in the budget presentations with our goals, and that we've added a new column, and that's a forecast. So we have our actuals through 2019. We have our 2020 budget, and then in the third blue bar from the right is what we forecasted when I presented the budget. Subsequently, with our results that we're seeing, in, and I took the actuals to date through November and made an estimate for December, the second bar from the right is where I estimate we will be. Now, it may change when the final numbers come in February 19th, but we did see an increase in revenue and a decrease in spending in the last 3 months of the year after we had set, so to speak, our forecast for the year. So I do think we're going to do a little bit better this year than I had forecasted. Still below, and you can see a little bit of growth of 2021 in the last column. But we're close to the $100 million number, and I'll get into some details later. So let's go to the next slide, please. So this was a slide we presented to the rating agencies in 2015. We told them that the container shipping business was dynamic. We talked about the recent changes in 2015, the new alliances, the growth in ship size, and that's at that time, a big ship was 8,000 TEUs. We had lived through the Great Recession of 2009 and 10. We were competing and still compete with a country that has a coordinated national plan for cargo, whereas in the United States, we do not have a national coordination on facility investments. And we've seen all these different ports on the Gulf Coast, the East Coast, and the West Coast making significant investments in infrastructure. And of course, we were unclear what the impact of the widening of the Panama Canal would be in May of 2015, because the Panama Canal was completed in 2016. So that's what was the background of what was going on in the industry. At that time, the Puget Sound was number three gateway in the US, and we had good intermodal connections and overall short shipping time from Asia. But we did have a situation where our existing terminals were too small for these new ships, the ultra-large ships that were on the drawing board and slowly coming into the Asia-Europe trade zone, but weren't quite yet into the Asia-Pacific trade zone. So that was what was going on in 2015. So our response to the rating agency was the formation of the alliance, where we could coordinate customer relations, increase our capacity utilization, rationalize strategic investments, and combine our forces to use our political influence that we have by being working together than being separate. Next slide, please. This is a new slide that we added. We didn't talk about this in 2015, but this was certainly an issue back in 2015. The Canadian have an advantage, the HMT. We heard recently their healthcare impact on the Canadian labor costs. They certainly have lower rail rates. The U.S.-Canadian dollar exchange, before about 2012, the U.S.-Canadian dollar exchange rate was about 1-to-1. Since then, it's been $1.25 or higher. So since they being the shipping lines, are paid in U.S. dollars.
Unknown participant is now joining.
But pay in Canadian dollars for cargo going through Canada, there's significant savings for the shipping lines by using Canadian ports. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Canada does have a national freight strategy that we're competing with versus our fragmented approach within the United States. And both ports were certainly losing share to Canadian ports in 2015. Next slide, please. John did go through a timeline of the competition, the more recent competition between the ports of Seattle and ports of Tacoma. Commissioner Marzano has a longer history than I do, and he could remember that the port of Tacoma got into the international container lines when Maersk moved down to the West Sitcom, which was then known as APM Terminals 30 years ago. But in 2008, 2009, we did have Maersk move. They left their own terminal operating company, APMT, and went up to Seattle. At the same time, John mentioned the major investment the Port of Tacoma had made in a big deal with NYK. And we had forecasted over $600 million worth of spending to develop that terminal on the Blair-Hylabis Peninsula. John did mention the Grand Alliance and the competition for the Grand Alliance in 2012, where the Port of Tacoma gave some significant concessions and incentives for the Grand Alliance, which was Hapag-Lloyd, NYK, OOCL, Hyundai Merchant Marines, and ZIM, that was the Grand Alliance at that time, to move down to Tacoma. Some of those concessions, including delaying CPI increases for 5 years. So Hyundai Merchant Marines, their CPI increases every 5 years. We forgoed an increase, which was probably $750,000 a year. Plus, there were additional rail incentives and capital improvement payments to Hyundai Merchant Marine of over $2 million a year in addition to that. To help them support the Grand Alliance at the Hyundai Merchant Marine Terminals. Next slide, please. This was a question that we posed, is what would have happened had the NWSA not been formed in 2015? As John mentioned, the two home ports would have competed for container customers to justify either the rebuilding of Husky or the rebuilding of T5. Both home ports may have built their respective terminals to be big ship capacity ready. So in 2014, a little history for the seven commissioners who are new. In 2014, bad environmental material, tributyl 10, was found under the T4 wharf, which was the wharf more towards PCT terminal at the end of the Hylabis at Husky Terminal. We had to tear out the wharf. And the decision was close to being made to rebuild, but we were in the process of removing that wharf. At the same time, Seattle would have been considering what to do with T5 with the departure of APL. Additionally, John mentioned that auto warehousing and WWL's auto and break bulk business were up for renewal, and the two home ports could have been competing for those businesses. And the two, the new ocean carrier alliances would have been able to play the two ports against each other for better results, resulting in lower financial returns for the two home ports. So that's one of the situations. Yes, sir.
Yeah, just real quick, Commissioner Steinberg has his hand up.
Yeah. What this doesn't address is the steady decline in market share that we've seen since 2015. And the question that I have here on this list is on the what if question is, have the ocean carriers not taken their business elsewhere as a result of our alliance and the tougher, you know, terms as a result of the fact that we're not competing? Has that been an influence? And probably there's no real answer to that question.
Well, the only place there would have been negotiation that I can think, Commissioner, is at Husky Terminal. And that's where we've had a new lease terms. And those were under development at the time we formed the alliance. I think there's more external, my opinion, and certainly maybe John wants to pipe in as he should be expressing his opinion. I think there's external sources or external forces moving cargo away more than our stronger position in negotiating with our customers.
Because we do know that it's discretionary cargo, so, and they have options.
I'll be blunt. I sent my daughter to Canada for school, university. I couldn't have done it had not the Canadian dollar gotten so much weaker. At 1-to-1, I couldn't do it. But at $1 US for $1.30 Canadian, that 30% discount made it financially feasible for me. I think that's a big impact in our loss of cargo to Canada.
Okay, thank you.
You're so welcome. Next slide, please. This was a slide we presented in 2015. It certainly shows the competition. This slide came, I believe, from Mercator and their studies in the 2014. The expansion numbers are certainly old from 2015, but you can see the lack of a coordinated approach. All these different ports putting significant capital investments in expanding their capacity to handle cargo. And, you know, Prince Rupert opened up in 2007, so it's a relatively new player, obviously. Next slide, please. And in 2015, this was a slide we showed to the rating agencies at this time. You know, an 8,000 TEU ship was a very big ship in 2014. And now we're talking about 14,000 TEU ships coming to the Northwest Seaport Alliance. And certainly there's 22,000 TEU ships in the Asia Europe trade. So this was certainly a driver. We recognized that we needed to invest in larger cranes and more spacious terminals to support the cargo coming off larger ships. Next slide, please. This is a slide we reviewed with the rating agencies with a little bit of new information. The next slide, you're on the next slide, Leilani. Perfect. So when we presented to the rating agencies, we looked at a couple of our three scenarios, the baseline scenario, which was used for the valuation. And in that, we did not have the investments of either building T5 or rebuilding Husky Terminal and buying new cranes. And that's the blue line and the blue area. That was kind of our baseline. The upside was with building T5 and building Husky and hopefully attracting new strings and new cargo to the gateway. And the difference from what we presented in 2015 to this slide is in the red boxes at the bottom, I put what actual numbers were in terms of TU, and they pretty much coincide with the blue line. We're right along that blue line. And by the way, in the model that we showed, which was the upside, we would have completed T5 and Husky by 2019. So our timeline has changed by combining resources and managing through the alliance. And the hope is that with T5 and Husky and our other investments in terminals, that we will attract new cargo and grow the gateway. Next slide, please. This slide was also shared with the rating agencies at the time. John certainly talked about it. You can see what was current in 2015 was about a 50% utilization. In fact, it was below 50%. We had the plans for the rebuilding of the Husky Berth 4, and Terminal 5 was on the drawing board and undergoing design and permitting. Our vision at that time was in 10 years, by 2025, getting to 70% utilization, growing to 6 million TEUs, and repurposing some of the international container acres, which were in 2015 timeframe, over 1,000 acres down to about 800 acres used for international container. So that was the story or the plans when we talked to the rating agencies in 2015. Next slide, please. So our rationale for the Northwest Seaport Alliance objectives was to adopt a regional approach to promote maritime cargo activity with a unified management structure for marine cargo, unified business retention and recruitment with coordinated operation and planning, and approved alignment between customer needs and terminal capabilities. So there has been cases where now that we formed the alliance, where it's been better for the customer to move to either Seattle or Tacoma, but we weren't in competition lowering our rates. We were making the customer more competitive, the shipping lines more competitive, and helping our terminal operators as well, who were also back before the formation alliance, making reductions in their profitability as they competed for business. We certainly optimize utilization and value of existing marine cargo assets. Our hope was to maintain market share, and we certainly have issues there with the competition we're seeing from the East Coast, the Gulf Coast, and Canada. What we told them is we want to achieve overall financial returns to enable reinvestment and provide revenue to each port. And at that time, it was very important that we provided bondholders protection and support the Port of Tacoma and Port of Seattle's bond obligations. We were equal and committed partners. Commissioners from both ports were fully committed to the goals of the Northwest Seaport Alliance, is what we said to the rating agencies in 2015. Negotiations were characterized as significant trust and cooperation. And as we continue to do, we continue to collaborate, such as the Northwest Ports Clean Air Strategy was as an example we gave them in 2015. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, we ran three financial forecasts. The Northwest, each forecast contained the Alliance income and capital investments. And then at the time, the Port of Tacoma and Port of Seattle's individual bond rate covenants. The scenario one, which was the baseline, which I showed earlier, was without the T5 and Husky redevelopment. It was based on the valuation increase. Now, we had hired an external firm to do the valuation with inputs from the two home ports, both operational and finance. It included revenue from interim use at that time, which was at that time mainly T5, but we had also concerns about West Sitcom and OCT at that time. And we did include some new renewal and replacement capital, but not the major investments in Husky and T5 was in our baseline. And our second scenario was the strategic terminal development, which did include the redevelopment of T5 and T4 for the mega ships and the incremental revenue associated with that. And then for the rating agencies, we did do a stress test as to what happens if we built T4 and T5, but that we did not get the revenues that we expected. Next slide, please. This is a summary that we presented to the rating agencies in 2015. The graphs below are the two home ports' debt service coverage ratio. The Port of Tacoma has a commission policy on the lower right-hand corner of being 2x debt service coverage ratio, fully diluted. The Port of Seattle, I believe, is at 1.35.
Stephanie is now joining.
For their debt service coverage. But more importantly is the table up above, and it summarizes the scenarios for the 10-year outlook. We had the valuation numbers, which would form the helped us form the 50-50 split between the two home ports, and what the baseline capital was only $166 million. The second scenario was the strategic investment, which included the rebuilding of Terminal 4, purchase of, at that time, I believe it was only 4 cranes, not 8 cranes, and the reinvestment in T5 with some repurposing of T46 and other terminals for other maritime or best in high use. That had a capital spending of $736 million, and it required that the Port of Tacoma issue about $100 million of debt and the Port of Seattle issue about $350 million worth of debt. And again, at this time, T5 and both Husky would have been completed by 2019. That's what we presented in the 2015 analysis. Now, the Port of Tacoma had issued new debt of about $90 million in 2016, so we did less. The Port of Seattle has not yet had to issue debt specifically for the maritime business. They've used general funds and tax levy so far in their work, and that's mainly because I think T5 has certainly been delayed from being open in 2019 to now the 2021 opening. And then we had our stress test where we had a lower revenue and would have required more debt to support that. Next slide, please. So we got some written feedback. I won't go through here, read it word from word, but there was positive feedback in terms of the elimination of the intra-Puget Sound competition and the stronger political positions and our ability to work with customers. And there was concerns, though, about having two governance organizations, the combining of the two ports and the political pressure associated with that. And both Moody's and, on the next slide, S&P provided feedback that you had in your packet and can read without me going over it. So I'll go on to my last slide. I did go back and
David,
look.
Yes. Sorry to interrupt. Commissioner Steinbrück has his hand up.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's always good to pause and see if there are questions as we proceed through lengthy presentations. Just a suggestion. I would like to know.
Peter, this.
Yeah.
Just real quickly. Yeah, I'm having a little bit of trouble. So, Judy, if you could send me that link again, because I'm on my phone.
Oh.
I can't see all the hands.
Yeah.
Okay, Peter, sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask about Port of Tacoma's choice of debt financing versus versus other sources such as the levy. There aren't a lot of other sources, I'm sure, besides the levy. And I understand that Tacoma's levy capacity is pretty constrained. Is that correct? And or is that a political decision? And has the levy lid been increased in recent years? Tacoma's, that is.
I can talk to the facts. I will let the Port of Tacoma commissioners talk to the politics.
Yeah.
The valuations in King County are significantly higher than the valuations of property in Pierce County. Today, I don't remember to 2015, I'm sorry, but today's Port of Tacoma tax levies in the $21 million range, and we could go up to $26 million. My memory is that Port of Seattle is either levying $70 million or $80 million this year, and you're well below your capacity, which is in the 100, 110 range. So the King County valuations are bigger. Your millage rate is not significantly different than ours. We dropped ours down to about 17 cents per thousand. I think yours is around 18 cents per thousand. But certainly just the economic dynamics between King County and Pierce County have a significant influence in the amount of money that's available. Then I will shut up and let the electeds talk to the political issue.
Okay. I guess the first question is, has there been a levy increase? Or when was the last time that Tacoma raised its mill rate? Is that the correct term to use? Yeah.
So the Port of Tacoma has used a set millage rate and gone up and down with the valuations over the years. And so it peaked in about 2012, took a significant reduction, and then has gone back up. And this year for 2021, for the first time, the Portage Coma Commission decided to change the millage rate, had a modest increase in the tax levy, which is the total dollars collected, and just raised and it resulted in a millage rate decreasing down to 17.3 cents per thousand from 18.3.
Well, okay. That's sufficient for now, unless Port of Tacoma wants to respond.
Yeah, Peter, if I may, very quickly, what we've done
is now joining.
Anybody on the Port Commission can please correct me if I'm wrong, but we've stayed at the millage rate, trying to maintain it. We've talked internally about if we were to try to raise it, we would want a specific reason, looking at the public possibly going out and saying, okay, we want to invest X amount of dollars, or we want to use these monies for this particular thing. And that's how we've been doing this in probably the last 5 or 10 years. So this doesn't say we would never raise it. It doesn't say we would never reduce it. It just says that we look at specific issues and where we are right now with the revenue we're getting, are we still able to conduct the business we need to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's remarkable we do as well as we do with the very small fraction of public subsidy that goes into our business line, our operations. Anyway, thank you.
So I went back to the original valuation model that was created by Martin Associates in 2015. We did not have money for rebuilding Husky or the investments in T5. And in fact, we had reduced Port of Tacoma's revenue contributions because of an impaired asset. Husky, before we had taken out T4, had two wharfs, and we had removed one and not replaced it. So the valuation had taken that into account. I then went and took that original model. I compared the actual performance to the charter model, and I adjusted for the capital that we've made in the Husky and T5, which were decisions made after the formation of the alliance. You may remember that the original charter model had T5 at 50% of the Seattle Container Terminal lease rate, the MAG rate, and that we've subsequently had a revaluation and that there's a payment over time of up to $32 million from the Port of Seattle to the NWSA for that. But I did keep my comparison to the original charter model of 2015. So in that charter model, the net cash, which was distributable cash less capital investments, and those capital investments do not include T5 and the Husky upgrades, the charter model was $366 million. And for 2016 through 2019, because I did not have 2020 numbers yet, was 368. So there's a lot of mixes, different revenue streams, different capital investments, 100 moving parts, and at least 100 moving parts and going through the comparison. But we're not that different from where we thought we would be from a baseline in 2015. And with that, I've gone through the presentation. I'm open for any other questions.
Questions, any questions with regards to what David has gone through or even what John had talked about before we go to our next? I see one person has her hand up. I don't know who that is, sorry.
Commissioner Meyer.
Okay, Don, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Marzano. First of all,
unknown participant is now exiting.
And Don, you're breaking up a little bit.
Let's see if it'll. Is that better, Dick? Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's
okay?
A little bit. A little scratchy, but go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, I apologize. Just a couple of comments. When John, you were going through some of the reasons why, I thought the one thing that wasn't emphasized enough, perhaps in terms of at least my motivation, was the connection on rail. and the focus that both of us could put on the rail piece, because after all, as Commissioner Steinbrück has made reference to, it's about discretionary cargo. International discretionary cargo is our biggest loss, I think, for the Canadian ports. So I never want to lose sight of the ability for both of us to leverage whatever it is we can do on the component, because I think that's a significant piece, perhaps even before the cost of going through a terminal is a big deal. The other thing I would say, when I look at the scorecard and thinking about the things that are very relevant, at what point in time can we look at making changes to that scorecard? And I want to give you a couple of examples, and one of which is in the reasons why we formed the alliance was to have an improvement or at least maintain our market share, but yet we're not tracking that in our scorecard. So I think we need to track that in our scorecard. The other thing is that I think that when I think about the alliance and the value of the alliance is having consistent policies across our terminal activities. And I think that we need some operational numbers such as crane moves per hour, some kind of a efficiency thing that I think is important when we look at a scorecard. So I'm looking forward to a point in time where we can talk about, are we tracking the right things on that scorecard, given what we know today? That to me is an important issue because we are what we measure. I firmly believe in that. And at a policy level, that to me is the most important thing. And so the other thing is that I thought was fascinating in terms of the reference to the governance structure. My biggest concern today, having voted in favor of the alliance, is losing sight on the very purpose of what the alliance, in my mind, is all about, and that is marine cargo. I do not want to see us creating a huge bureaucracy without a focus on maritime cargo and keeping it as lean and as effective as we can be. And that, to me, on the governance side, is a big issue that I think we all need to constantly think about and be very aware of, because it is an unusual model in that regard. And my major concern is we've got to be competitive. Now that we don't have any competition between us, what does competition really mean in the definition of efficiency of this gateway? So looking forward to more conversation on this, and those are just a few perceptions that I have, but I do appreciate very, very much this presentation, because I think it's helpful either as a reminder for some of us that were around, but also for our new members to really get honed in on the real purpose of this alliance and the value that it is creating for our gateway. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Commissioner Feldman, then Commissioner Steinbrück.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Marzano. I'll just jump in on what Commissioner Meyer just said. Certainly, having additional metrics to look at is I think very good. I do appreciate very much the deeper dive we've taken on looking at the competitive challenges with Canada and looking at some of those parameters that we've identified. It's certainly used as metrics to help explain the market share question rather than just seeing it going in one direction. And certainly the rail question and efficiencies, I think, are clearly things that we have some involvement with for sure. So, but in terms of just looking at the track record, you suggest that the 2016 is the sort of the baseline, and shouldn't it be 2015 and look at our respective ports, a net cash, and then look at post the creation of the alliance and have that be the, starting point, rather than be using the first year of the alliance, or is that basically the same thing?
I don't know how to combine 2015 actuals for the two home ports to make a NWSA that doesn't exist. That's the challenge with going back. In 2016, I have an actual financial result that I can compile and compare. And the valuation was based on expected cash flows from 15 through 24. But it is how would you actually take actual results from the two individual home ports and say, well, what would the alliance have been had they merged in 15? That's where I struggle. So I chose 16 because it was concrete, measurable, and specific.
I was just thinking, if you look at the assets that were, you know, ultimately valued as part of the alliance in 2015 for the respective home ports, what were they generating for the individual home ports? And then looking at, you know, with this combined effort and greater flexibilities and all the other attributes that we were hoping that the alliance would deliver, just to be able to say, look, you know, those same assets, if kept in their respective home ports, what did they generate in 2015? And then look at what the combined assets and cash distribution was now that they're combined. Wouldn't that just be relatively easy to do?
Let me jump in and give an example of what David's calling out to try and answer your question. So back in 2015, I'll use the example of T5 and what would have happened with T46. So let's say the alliance was not formed. We have to make an assumption about what Seattle, independent of the alliance, would have done with T46. Would Seattle have terminated the lease at 46 and signed up for the lease that at T5, which is what the alliance did? Or alternatively, would Seattle have kept the lease at 46 and made the investment in 5 and gone after business that was in Tacoma or elsewhere?
As the commissioner that was serving on the Port of Seattle, that's exactly what we were planning to do.
Thank you.
John, my question is a little different. I'm not trying to forecast, what we were able to leverage in the big investments we made and when we made them. Those are kind of hard to, I would agree, kind of hard to predict. But I'm just saying, net revenues in 2015 to the respective home ports. How do you, and then we went off and did strategic things that we would have never been able to do ourselves. But just as a point of reference, at that time in 2015, what were the home ports generating for themselves? And I don't think we could do independent forecasts from that point on. I was just questioning, you know, as a base point to look at, but then because of that alliance, look at what we're able to be accomplished from that point forward. And I don't know, it was just using 2016 once the alliance was already created seemed to be odd to me. Having said that, I would like to just go back to what Don said, Commissioner Meyer said about staying in cargo, which I totally agree was the goal, but I was just wondering the specificity of the backfill of T30 and 46, how clear were we at that time as to what we expected to backfill? Was it just, you know, was it left generically or it said specifically, thou shalt backfill with marine cargo?
We were driven in part, as I recall, by the presentation with the Mercator study. And my recollection is that it was less specific. It was more, the policy was water dependent maritime use.
Okay, you know, and obviously
I would add a preference for cargo, certainly.
And I think we all agree with that, absolutely. I'm just wondering whether the alliance charter, how specific was that call for marine dependent use? And that was just one thing. And just the final question was, while the actuals versus the charter, what we were predicting, excluded all the development, right, the financial investments in Husky and T5, did it include the payments that the Port of Seattle was making due to the change in valuation of five to, you know, our whatever, I guess, you know, the $30 million, that was really only, that's only really payable after the development, or I forget.
No, you're talking the revaluation for T5.
Right.
That is not treated as income. So I was comparing distributable cash based on income to the original charter model, which did not have that payment, obviously, but it had T5 at a significantly higher rate of revenue than has actually been experienced in its interim use.
So, okay. so anyway, that's not seen as a reduction in revenue.
It's not a revenue, it's a contribution.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Steinbrück, then Commissioner Keller.
Thank you. Just wanted to comment on a couple of the topics that have already been mentioned here, starting with Commissioner Meyer's comment regarding sticking to maritime cargo. This has been a recurring issue from time to time, if you can elevate it to an issue. I think we have to be resolute about the fundamental purpose of the alliance, as I understand it, which is to enhance our position with regard to water-dependent maritime cargo. And I think we shouldn't have any ambiguity about that. And if the charter doesn't say that, maybe it should be updated to make that absolutely clear that that is our fundamental mission, and that we mustn't stray from that with regard to lease properties. Otherwise, take them out of the leasehold properties bucket. Secondly, with regard to performance measures, I've done a lot of work over the years professionally as a consultant working with performance measures and metrics. And my feeling is that they are only a value, at least the key metrics are what on the dashboard, what we should stick to and not allow a continuous expansion of those metrics. But yes, I agree with the premise that we should be tracking our market share as under the financial performance. Our competitiveness is what we have to track, I think. And market share, I think, is key to that. And I, for one, would agree with the desire to see how we're doing with regard to market share. I think that's the very best indicator of our competitiveness and what work we have to do. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Before I go to Commissioner Keller and then Commissioner Ng, Dana, I see you have your hand up, so I'm assuming it's something that we're doing wrong or right or whatever. I can hardly hear you.
I'll come back.
Okay. Commissioner Keller.
Great. Thank you. I just have a question that I've already asked of John and David in an earlier presentation, but I wanted to ask all of the commissioners who were here before me, when and how and why did the Alliance decide to separate administrative services from the Port of Tacoma? I mean, if we're talking about streamlining and we're talking about administrative costs and things like that, because what I'm seeing with the financials is that the we're getting a reduction in reduced or a greater administrative spending on both sides. We're not getting, Port of Tacoma isn't getting paid back for services, because now with the Alliance we have totally separate administrative sort of getting to be that way. So I just wanted to ask, you know, from a historical perspective, what was the thinking with commissioners at that time?
Does anybody want
to? I'll jump in for Seattle since I was the only Seattle commissioner, if that's all right, Commissioner Marzano.
Yes,
Commissioner Keller, great. great question, and I want to harken back to something that Dave said at the very beginning. Operational efficiencies, administrative operational efficiencies, were not a key measurement or goal of forming the alliance. The number one goal of forming the alliance was to reduce the competition and go after the international cargo. And so we recognized from the beginning that there were going to be some inefficiencies in some overlapping services for the first few years of the alliance. The challenge that the Port of Seattle commissioners faced at the time in allowing the Port of Tacoma to basically run everything was quite frankly the fact that we were worried that they were not going to be able to have the same focus on just NWSA work, and that they would feel divided in doing that and then having a second responsibility to the Port of Tacoma. And so from the beginning, the idea was we had agreed that CEO Wolf at that time would serve in a dual role as the CEO of Port of Tacoma and the Northwest Seaport Alliance for the first 5 years. But moving forward after year five, from the beginning, it was indicated that he would be solely the CEO of the Northwest Seaport Alliance so that we could all have confidence that his focus was on NWSA work and not being divided for other interests and activities for the Port of Tacoma. I will say, and I'll obviously let the Port of Tacoma commissioners who were there at the time speak as well, but I know that there was also interest in the Port of Tacoma being able to expand some of its activities beyond just marine cargo and thinking about economic development. And from the Port of Seattle, what we were worried about was that if, for example, the CEO were wearing a dual hat, that he would then be pulled into doing economic development work for the Port of Tacoma and less focused on NWSA. I think that the move that John has made gradually to bring in staff that is solely now NWSA staff, that is exactly where we had wanted the alliance to go. It wasn't going to be from day one. It was going to be gradually, but we all recognized that there would be some additional costs administratively for the first few years, but that was not to be indefinite.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just am thinking about sometimes when we have our financial presentations with David that we kind of beat him up a little bit about administrative costs when it's very clear that, you know, we're going to increase our administrative costs, both with the Seaport Alliance and also with Port of Tacoma. And so I just, you know, we need to be understanding of that. So that's my point with that.
Okay, thank you. Dana, are you back on now where you want
to? Sure, sorry about that. I just wanted to offer with regard to questions about the charter. Certainly marine cargo as a focus of the alliance is well expressed in the charter and certainly expressed as the primary intention, but you did leave yourself some flexibility in that cargo for maritime activities more generally than marine cargo by referring to and incorporating the RCW for Port Development Authority, which is what the alliance is. So there is some flexibility there, but certainly the focus is on marine cargo.
Thank you, Commissioner Eng, then Commissioner Myers, and understanding we only supposedly have 17 minutes left and we have a lot to go through.
And Commissioner Marzano, Commissioner McCarthy also has his hand raised.
Okay, I didn't see that. Sorry, John.
Sure, I think Dana did answer some of my questions because I guess when I was briefed about the formation of the Northwest Seaport Alliance, I had the understanding that our premier terminals, the ones that could service the ultra large ships, that was the one that we were renovating to hold international cargo to be competitive in that sphere. But there was also a secondary issue with the, reason, impetus for the formation of Seaport Alliance is to what to do with the rest of the real estate and what kind of economic development. And I thought that would be more open to what could be rather than just marine cargo. Sure, there is to support our marine cargo operations, but I thought we would be opening ourselves up to different opportunities as well. Because I saw in that cargo, that card that John showed us, the four things, cargo, financials, environmental. When I look at financial and jobs, I don't necessarily just will tie it to our marine cargo. I was thinking we could be more open to economic development that may or may not be marine cargo operations, but it leaves us open to compete for that or be for that, because if you looked at it as not leaving our eggs in one basket, We're going to compete for the international cargo, but we must leave ourselves open for other businesses in case we're not as competitive. I always kind of have, you know, diversify your portfolio, they say. And the other one is I had questions about when Canada started really investing into their infrastructure on the railway, because it seems like I read a white paper a long time ago in the 2000s about how they decided to compete by not necessarily investing in their terminals, but to look outside first into their railways and supply chain and go backwards and to see how they can go from there. So I guess I was curious about when Canada started, we really started taking a look at them as competitors and when they started to invest in their transportation infrastructure, and now they're investing into the digital highway. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Meyer, then Commissioner McCarthy.
Thank you, Commissioner Marzano. I guess I want to quickly respond to Commissioner Keller. Your question is a great question about when and why. I suspect for those of us that were there at that time, it'll be different answers. But the reality is we all knew at that time that it would be expensive during a transition period. And that's why we set it up for a five-year kind of a scenario. The reality in my mind, though, is that if both of us had commercial marketing teams for the container line of business, at what point in time is there savings in there? And so I bought into the idea, yes, it'll be initially more expensive because of that transition. But at some point in time, I worry about us creating too big of a bureaucracy in terms of the overall structure, both from the standpoint of a home port as well as the alliance. To Commissioner Eng's question on Canada, when I first became a commissioner, I will tell you, I went up there and got a briefing. And what Canada has done is they've done something very, very significant in terms of the briefing we got from the Ministry of Transport. And it was a very simple statement. Canada is building trade corridors to service the needs of North America. That was the statement being made. And if you look at the investment of the railroad going clear down into the Gulf, you can understand their strategy. And that's why they've been eating our lunch, is they've had a good strategy around significant trade corridors. And but we're making progress. So I'm not going to be, I don't want to end on a negative note, because with the harbor maintenance tax revisions that we've seen recently, some of these things take time. But the reality in my mind is that the formation of the alliance has been effective in the sense of certain priorities we've had. The harbor maintenance tax is one of them. So, but don't never underestimate Canada's influence in terms of building the infrastructure necessary to take and basically take cargo away from us. And I'm always reminded of 40% of the grain going out of Western Canadian ports comes from the U.S., just as a reminder. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner McCarthy. John, you may be on mute.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. I tried to get my computer set up at a new location at the port and missed some of the early presentation and slides, but so I'm glad to join you now. So I haven't seen all the slides that John and David showed, and so certainly would like a copy of that. But, my perspective is just kind of talking in general as a board member, looking at the big picture of this, not being the expert in commercial cargo customer development, but looking at the big picture, where did we stand? Where do we stand? Where are we going? And I know the early history of the Port of Tacoma, obviously having served a decade in the years that we were growing like crazy, but then having been gone for 25 years. And having returned and gone back and studied extensively the formation of the Alliance, some of the principles that were involved in it, what I seem to be hearing, quite honestly, is that a lot of things happened, over the last 10 years as a result of which we're losing market share. And we're trying as hard as we can, but we can't seem to be doing very much about it. And we can beat our heads against the wall. But kind of what I'm hearing is we're just lucky we're not in worse shape. We would have been in worse shape if we hadn't created this alliance and stopped fighting over the same cargo. So that's kind of one of my takeaways for some of this conversation. And as a board member, I'm trying to figure, is it really working? Is the alliance really working? Or is it just being executed poorly? Have there been bad decisions made? Did we not recognize what was happening in Canada or other places and should have reacted in another format? And the reasons that's important is because we've got to make decisions going forward whether we need to shift gears in any respect. And I guess my big concern, one of the charts that was in our preliminary agenda packet was the market share chart from 15 to 20. And I don't know if it was in the package that John and David showed, but it's a very significant chart. And because in 2015, the Port of Tacoma's market share was 8.5% of the West Coast cargo, including the LA, Long Beach, and Canada. 8.5% Tacoma's share was. In 2020, Tacoma's share was 6.5% of the market share. We were the only port on the West Coast that lost market share of that significance. Even Seattle's market share was flat and maybe a little bit down, but not losing 25% of the overall or 2% in firm numbers of market share. So when I get emails or see emails from longshore folks from Tacoma talking about why is LA up 17% and we're still year over year going to be down 12%. And I also saw one of the indicators is longshore hours. Jared Faker, the president of Tacoma Longshore Local, sent us all a letter just this last week. And I talked to him about it just in the last couple of days. And it was a great letter talking about in a very positive fashion, but also expressing how they were down in terms of their longshore work hours substantially last year. You know, 15%. We're still going to be, even with this huge input of cargo this summer and fall, we're still down a lot over previous years. So I've got, as a board member, I've got to hold my staff accountable for some things. One, finances. You know, if our income's down $30 million for the year, our operating's down $30 million, there's a problem. If our expenses are up, there's a problem. If we in Tacoma have lost 2% of West Coast market share, I've got to ask the question, is the alliance really working for us in Tacoma? Or should I accept what I seem to be hearing is that there's a lot of factors beyond our control and we're just going to be losing market share. We're not going to be one of the major players as Canada has become through decisions that they've made. And as LA, Long Beach is because of population and decisions that they've made. So as a board member, number one, you know, I've got a responsibility to hopefully adopt some policies that set some direction that will move us in a positive fashion. And I think there's a lot of positive things going on, but just looking at it from the big picture is kind of discouraging to me. And I'm not convinced that the plan going forward is the appropriate plan. I think, objectively, from my perspective, the underlying philosophy of a great part of the alliance, knock off the competition, do a lot of the other things that have been, is great. For some reason, either the execution hasn't been appropriate, or if not the execution, the overall dynamics and other factors have overwhelmed the positive intent of the alliance, which was to maintain and grow market share. So that's kind of my look at this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, John. A quick question for both John Wolfe and Dana, because of the time. Do we have a problem if we go like to 11 o'clock with this subject and then go into the FMC?
Commissioner Marzano? This is Leilani. We do not have a time, set time, so we can run over since we're in public session. So we're at your leisure.
I think if I don't have any objections from the rest of the commissioners, why don't we schedule like at 11 o'clock, trying to shoot for that time frame and continue on with this subject? I don't see anybody yelling and screaming, so let's just do that. I want to make a quick comment before we go to the next thing. And when we formed this alliance, one of the reasons and the main reason that I looked at it personally was the fact that we were facing a lot of competition from Canada. It was hard, and we were just fighting with each other. We had been for ever since I started on the waterfront in the 1960s and 70s. So I look at the man hours. That's how I generate, or at least look at it a little bit. And in 2015, the Seattle-Tacoma waterfront had 4.4 million man hours. 2019, 4.6. This doesn't mean that we couldn't have done better had we not had such an increase in the Canadian market and what they were doing, and with the help they were getting from the government and the railroad. I do seriously believe that had we not formed the alliance, those numbers would have been a lot more reduced based on more cargo going through Canadian markets. So there's no doubt adjustments need to be made. We can do some things. Part of the thing that we did do, and one of the things we've done, is incentivize some of the customers to call in our market. So those are avenues we may have to look at. So if there's no more questions, I think I saw one hand raised, but I don't know who that was.
It's Commissioner Cho.
Okay, Commissioner Cho.
Yeah, I just, obviously I haven't been here as long as many of my colleagues, but I did want to offer an observation, I guess. And that is, in the 1 year that I've been here, I feel like the 90% of the conversations we have when it comes to our gateway is around rearranging things within our own gateway, right? Whether it's the Glovis thing or a Glovis contract or T46 or T5 or Husky Terminal, like I have yet to really hear, and I'd be curious to hear from John's team, like what we're actively doing to go beyond what we already have, beyond what we're already, what business we already are dealing with. And I think part of the struggle is probably, when you do a merger like this between two entities, there's probably some confusion even to our customers about how this all works and all that. And so I understand that the first few years, there was probably us rearranging things because that's the nature of the merger. But at a certain point, I feel like, and I'm not saying we're not doing this, I just don't know, is like we need to start, like when we say expanding the gateway, that's, we need to go beyond what's already in the gateway, right? So, whether that's looking for opportunities to go beyond our current gate operators or our current carriers, or maybe even beyond cargo, but perhaps we should be talking about what are we targeting and what are we doing to go beyond what we already do.
And thank you. I think that leads us to the next segue with regarding key strategic initiatives. So John, is that, you want to take that away, or whoever's running it?
Commissioner, that technically isn't on our agenda. That was an additional information that went in your packet. And I haven't received any feedback from commissioners on the 2021 key initiatives to be able to be prepared for John to speak about it, unless he is comfortable now. Or we can wait on that topic.
Yeah, okay. I was not aware of that. So, Commissioner Ang, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, sure. Since John might be addressing something, I'm going to add some questions to him. I am aware that, the population, the density is actually on the East Coast. And, it's hard for us to compete when our population is not as dense with LA Long Beach, as well as some of the East Coast. But I know that we are trying to compete in certain markets that are underserved. with the rail that we're trying to do in the Dakotas. And I was wondering if you've seen a population shift. Like, I've heard of people moving to Texas, people moving to other places in the United States, or even the Rockies. Perhaps they are moving to places that we would be more competitive in serving. When Canada was going about it, I guess, from the other way around, transportation market to their gateway, I was wondering if we kind of reverse engineer as well, like what kind of markets are we trying to target and the transportation and the supply chain from there to our gateway and in between with Asia. Like, so I was wondering if we are looking at any other markets to get into, maybe new or just to become more competitive where we just remain dominant. Because there were a few markets where, when looking at the Mercator reports, where we had some advantages that Canada did not. And maybe there's even new markets that need to be served and new areas that you see. Thank you.
Do you want me?
Yeah, John, you want to address that? Go ahead.
Sure. So it's a great question about, you know, what are our strategic markets and what are the emerging markets that we can pursue? And it goes to something Commissioner Meyer mentioned earlier about, you know, our rail connections, because the further inland we reach, we're dependent upon efficient rail connections. And you can see a great example of that when the CN Railroad strategically invested in purchasing rail that essentially reaches all the way down to the Gulf Coast now. They did that strategically so that they could penetrate those new markets. So the way in which we pursue that, since we're not a railroad, is try to influence the railroads to make those investments where we say to them, hey, if we have slightly improved connections here, then we see market opportunity for us through this gateway that is beneficial to you, as compared to some of that cargo flowing to, say, Canada. The challenge we have is that to the south of us, there is major infrastructure and huge investment made by the railroads, the same two railroads that serve our gateway through San Pedro Bay, that touches those same markets. So if you're making business decisions and strategic capital investments as a railroad, you're going to look at what you have in existence first before you start to make a duplicate investment, so to speak. And so that is a challenge for us. It's not insurmountable, but it's a challenge because we don't make those decisions. We just have influence over them. That is why we leaned into the strategy of these inland terminals more recently, and we've had some success. The Minot initiative has proven to be successful. It has taken back some export cargo that was otherwise finding its way through a Canadian port, and that was in partnership with the BNSF Railroad and carriers. We could not have done that ourselves. Again, it's an example where we have to partner with the railroads, and where our interests align and where they see opportunity, that's where we have the greatest opportunity to take back share. There are other questions that were asked, and I'm trying to go back to market share. So market share is critically important, no question, and I think it's a great suggestion that we add that to our scorecard. I've shared this with each of you. When I look at our scorecard, I refer to it as a balanced scorecard, because all of the different quadrants are important to all of us. And sometimes an investment that benefits one quadrant can have an impact in a negative way to another quadrant. And we just need to recognize that, because if our sole goal was distributable cash, then we will make different policy, you all will make different policy decisions if that was our sole metric. If our sole metric is market share, you will make different decisions about where you invest. If your sole goal was environmental stewardship, again. So my point being that I think we need to have some further discussion about our scorecard, the balanced scorecard, and given where we sit today and the competitive threats that we're faced with and understanding those thoroughly, which I think you all do, where do we want to push the needle? Because that's where we need to put emphasis.
Thank you, John. I've got Commissioner Meyer, then Commissioner Cho.
Fallon's on deck as well.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Marzano. I guess I need a point of clarification here. On the 2021 Northwest Seaport Key Strategic Initiatives, I reviewed them very briefly. So are we intending today to provide feedback on these key strategic initiatives, or is this something that we should look at and then come back at a future date? And let me give you a couple examples why I think it's important we review this is that I think number one appropriately is Terminal 5 modernization, and the performance measurement that I'm interested in is on time and on budget for that project. And that to me is an important performance measurement. And I didn't see that here. So I'm questioning, you know, what's the process that John, you would anticipate we should provide as feedback to you today? Or is this something that we all should kind of review, make certain we understand it? Because there are statements in here that even on the rail, you indicate a focus around, I think it's Idaho and Washington. And I've been a big advocate with what's happening on the various rail centers. Oregon should be a part of our key message as well, terms of working for inland rails. So I'm asking more as a process question here as to how we handle this, because this is very important to us, very important.
Don, if I could, John, if I could real quickly, and I couldn't agree more. What I would strongly suggest is that because we've all received this, is we internally look at what questions like you have right now and things of that nature. Get those to John. And at the same time, John, let's set up a time where we can do this in depth, because I know there's a lot of other commissioners. We could be here for the rest of the day going through this. So I would much prefer us channel this as a standalone maybe item where all of us have looked at it, written down different questions or thoughts we have, convey them to you so we can get into it right at the start, if that's all right with the rest of the commission.
Remember. That sounds good. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Cho, then Commissioner Feldman.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick point here. And I apologize if I missed it in our slides, but when we talk about market share, and I think market share is extremely important, I think we need to level set it with how the market has changed as well, obviously. And so what would be helpful as a baseline is if we had our market share numbers, but then also looked at how much the market has expanded, because it is also very feasible that the pie has grown. And because the pie has grown, our market share has gone down, right? Not necessarily because we've lost business, but because there's more business out there. And so, John, it would be helpful if, you know, not just to get percentages, but to see like how big the market is relative to the percentages. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. And we will add that as a bit of detail to give context to market share, to your point, yeah. Commissioner. So, yeah.
And yeah, I think that additional context will also help us to understand like in what areas we could expand as well. I think just putting up percentages of market share is too high level for us to get a full grasp of what's going on in the market.
Got it.
Thank you. Commissioner Feldman, then Commissioner McCarthy.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to the third rail of the mission of the mostly of the backfill of the empty terminals. I'd like to see something that says something more like in support of marine cargo, that, you know, whether it be, you know, a training facility for
Stephanie
is now exiting.
You know, on dock warehousing, you know, what the other kind of things that we talked about, which would, you know, further the competitiveness of the gateway, but not, you know, marine cargo handling per se. And then that would also go into another real popular metric question about, you know, it's like, to me, it's like, you know, maritime jobs, waterfront vitality, some of those things may or may not be ILWU. And so we have ILWU hours as a key metric, which I completely support. But again, I don't want to see anything other than marine cargo operations and the support thereof. And I just want to make sure that the mission says that. So it's maybe an expansion of the mission, but still staying very much focused in the marine cargo realm as we chase down future opportunities.
Thank you. Commissioner McCarthy?
Just a quick comment as to Commissioner Cho's comment. I totally agree with him. But Sam, to just give you an idea, and this is what causes me concern. In 2012, 8 years ago, the Port of Tacoma did a 10-year strategic plan. And at that time, we had about 1.5 plus million TEUs that we were handling. The plan was by 2022, we would have 3 million just from the Port of Tacoma. Well, what's come out is after 8 years, we're at roughly 8 million ending last year, down from 2015, obviously, and 2012. So that gives you a little sense of why I have some real concerns. You know, we're 8 years into a 10-year plan with a goal of getting to 3 million, and guess what? We're about 1.8. So that's why it's a good, legitimate question. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any more hands up. So what we will do is conclude this. We will now recess for a closed session as authorized under the Federal Maritime Commission regulations and related laws found at 46 USC Section 40306, 46 CFR Sections 535.608 and 535.701 sub 1, and as authorized by the Federal Maritime Commission Agreement Number 201228. The closed session expected to last roughly 2 hours, after which we will adjourn. There will be no action taken during that closed session. So if I'm right, what we're going to do now is get out of this session and reconvene in the other link. Am I right on that?
Yes, you are correct. And if it were possible, if the commissioners agree, can we go ahead and start FMC at 11 o'clock? We'll give everyone maybe a 20-minute break. I've got IT here to help Commissioner McCarthy's issues with his laptop and getting him online. And we'd like the extra time if that's all right.
That's no. I'm sure you won't get any objections from the managing members. So with that, we will stand adjourned in the public session and reconvene in the FMC session at 11 o'clock. Thank
Commissioner
you.
Marzano?
Yes.
Zeno?
Yes, go ahead.
Just one note is that maybe we should announce that we aren't going to reconvene in public session after the FMC. Will adjourn, and then just in case anybody's waiting to come back on.
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you for that update. Okay, that's what we will do. So with that, we'll see everybody in the next meeting.